This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my very special guest, Jenny Law.
Hello.
Hi, welcome, Jenny. Jenny is a lady of many talents. She is a celebrant, a poet and a speech and drama teacher, amongst many other things. So I think we'd like to start with finding out a bit more about you through your poetry.
Okay then, Joan.
Yeah, so you've got so many subjects. When we were talking earlier, you've got things that I think so many of us can relate to. You've got being a single mum, so mm-hmm. Put my hand up to that one. Aging, yep, here I am. And revisiting old boyfriends, perhaps when you get a little bit older and you've run out of new stock, you go back to the old. Domestic abuse, I mean, there's an awful lot. And even going to a tarot reader and not liking what you hear.
Yes.
You've got so much going on. So
I have. Yeah. I have. They're not all written from personal experience.
I would hope not, because you would have had a hell of a life.
I know. Yes. But some of them are, and some of them are experiences of friends or something I've seen on television, perhaps. And I thought, yes, and put myself into that role, because from an acting point of view, which is another of my talents, not particularly famous, but you take on experiences from other people,
yes,
and try and develop them. And through my poetry, I might have seen something on television and tried to develop it.
Okay, so which one would you like to start with? How about the tarot one? Because that really intrigued me when you were telling that.
Now, this is one I've never performed it. As you know, I do spoken word gigs from time to time, and we've met there. But this one I've never performed, because it requires two voices, and it's very difficult when it's one person standing up. But I thought, because this is radio, let's have a go and see if I can master the two voices.
Okay.
Now, this one is, sometimes you'll go to a tarot reader and have cards read, or go to a psychic and look for answers, because you don't know what's going on and you think someone else has got the solution for you. Sometimes you don't like what you're told.
And now, have you been to a tarot reader or a psychic?
Yes, I also read cards myself. One of my friends is a psychic working locally. One of my best friends is a psychic working locally. So I do know how these things can happen.
Okay.
And this particular poem is, for all you tarot people out there, is written using the Rider Waite set of cards. It does describe the pictures, so if you know the pictures, it might help you a bit. It's a young lady who's been left on the shelf, and she wants a boyfriend, and so she goes to a tarot reader and she's looking for answers about when she's going to meet a boyfriend.
Okay, fire away.
It's called Crossing.
Thank you.
Oh, don't you look a happy one today? You sit there in control and so content, with friends and fun and health and love in life, and I can see there's money to be spent. But yet it seems that you are all alone. You choose to hide, not join the band and sing. I wonder why you're isolated so. Let's see what news the other cards might bring. I feel you've played the martyr. Am I right? You see the way you're hanging from that tree. But you've been forced to take that route, it seems. Well, yes, it's true. That sounds a lot like me. My dear, fear not. That fate is in your past and in the way in which you see yourself. The future brings you something new, I think. What? Do you mean I get down from the shelf? A hermit crab needs time and space to grow, and afterwards must come out from the shell. The days and weeks you've spent hiding away have reached an end. That all sounds very well. About my love life, does it then improve? Well, certainly there's someone near the scene. Athletic in his build and pale blue eyes, and I would say that you're very keen. And what about the fish, the one he holds? Don't think of fish. It's there to symbolise that he brings food and warmth, security. He is the man, I think, who cries. Because his heart is pierced by three huge daggers. The heart is yours, and this card's there to warn that if mistrust can triumph over reason, it is your heart alone that will be torn. But I don't think you'll do that, now you've told. No, look, The sun, it shines and full of joy, a sense of summertime and carefree laughs. I think you find your soulmate in this boy.
That isn't me. I'd never ride a horse. And my hair isn't yellow. Look, it's brown. And naked, out in public, you must joke. What do you think I am, some sort of clown?
You cannot hide from happiness, my dear, if that is what the fates decide for you. A major card is not there to be questioned. Your love approaches, and that love is true.
So now I have to ask you, have you ever been to a tarot reader and not like what you've heard?
Yes. If I must be honest, yes. Actually, probably not so much I've been to a tarot reader and not like what I've heard. I did have one experience many, many years ago where I was told to that I was supposed to speak to my father. This was maybe 20 years ago, but my father died in the very early 70s. And so I pointed that out and I said, so I think this is a load of rubbish, and I walked out. But I decided that I would get the cards and I would do it myself. And since then, sometimes I like what I see, and sometimes it's very difficult when you play tarot or deal tarot cards for yourself.
So you're doing your own readings?
So if I were to do my own readings and I don't like it, I'll just redeal.
See, that's the thing. When you redeal, you get a different set of cards.
Absolutely, absolutely. If I'm doing it with someone else and someone else is doing my reading, then it is slightly different, and I don't question it, really.
No,
I don't.
So going back to the thing you didn't, the thing that you heard that you didn't like, did it turn out to be true?
What, get in touch with my dad?
No, you said, was that the thing that you didn't...
That's what I thought. Well, that's not really very right, is it?
But I suppose, you know, you can... there are still ways to talk to your father, even though he's dead, you know.
Yes, I think there are, actually, if you wanted to
those
go
internal,
down that route.
Well, I mean, those kind of internal conversations where you think, I wonder what he would say, given these set of problems or this issue, what would he advise? You can talk in that way. It depends how you interpret it, doesn't it?
Yes, you could, often with people that have passed, perhaps you could. In this particular instance, I was a very young child, so I couldn't put myself into his position and look for his answers. But I think that there are answers, and sometimes you do have to go back into yourself and rethink from a different angle to the solution for your problems.
And what would you say to people who are quite sceptical about tarot and psychics?
Everyone's entitled to their opinion. You can't live your life by what a psychic says. I think that's wrong. You have to take opinions. But I can't sit here and say what they say is rubbish, and we have to disregard everything, because there are experiences, I can't remember off the top of my head, but there are experiences that I have been aware of that I've thought, oh yes. And so I think you have to take everything, really, and look at... we don't know what's out there. We know within our own existence what's there, but you can go into philosophy and you can look quite broadly, can't you, and think, what is there beyond what we can see? That can we... is there things that we can't see?
Yes, and I suppose it's almost like having somebody else's... not opinion, because they don't give you their opinion, but perhaps it prompts you to look in a different direction sometimes. That's... and opens your mind a little bit.
I think that would be a very useful thing, because we are very narrow-minded sometimes, aren't we, and very stuck in our ways.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I have always been very sceptical of such things, but I was going through quite a difficult period, and I went to see... and she was actually a friend of mine, so she knew a lot about me, she knew a lot about my situation, but there was one key thing she did not know, and nobody knew. And in the card and I was actually I was on the dole. I was unemployed at the time, so I had no money and no prospect of getting any anytime soon. But she said, you will go on a very exotic trip, you know, to the far away. She was very definite about this, and it was going to happen in the next 3 or 4 weeks, which could have been seen as quite a cruel suggestion, given that I had no money. What she didn't know was the fact that a friend's parents had very kindly and generously paid for a flight for me to go and visit their daughter in New Zealand. So, like I said, I'd kept that so quiet because I wasn't even sure if I was going to go. I couldn't believe. I used to open the drawer, look at the ticket, and I think, is that really there? Is this somebody been that lovely and that kind? And yes, they had, but she didn't know it. So I thought, my goodness me, that's overwhelmingly correct, and I'm not sure I can argue with that. She might have just got lucky, I suppose.
We can always say that, or it could be lucky, but you don't know for certain.
No.
And if you don't know for certain, then I think it's good to keep an open mind.
But I do know, yes, I agree. And I think a lot of people, like you say, you can't live your life by what the tarot says. But
no.
I think a lot of people do come to depend on it, and it almost becomes an addiction, and they have regular readings, and it almost seems to guide their life.
I don't think that's a good idea.
No.
I don't think that's a good idea, because then you're allowing someone else really to tell you how to live your life.
And particularly, I think people go often when they're at a very low ebb and they're looking for hope, like you said earlier.
Absolutely.
They're looking for positive answers and something to look forward to.
Yeah.
A light at the end of the tunnel.
Absolutely.
And I know another one of your poems that I've heard and I really like, because it does resonate with me, and it's about being in perhaps a sort of a fairly dark place when you get a little bit older and you're skimming around looking for fresh meat in the boyfriend department, but there's none on sale.
No.
So you have to go back to perhaps the ones you discarded earlier on. And I love this poem that you do. And
this is retread, isn't it?
Yes, that I feel a lot of the women in the audience are all sitting there recognising and relating to it, but not daring to say.
No. Well, actually, this is retread, and this is inspired by Bridget Jones all those years ago. Was it 20 years ago? Helen Fielding wrote the first books. And one of the terms that she uses is retread. And that is when you are looking for a boyfriend, but there is no one there. So you start to retread by looking at the boys you disregarded in the past. You know, when you're 14 and he's got glasses and spots, and you're like, not going with you. Or going out with you when you're 14 and at high school. And then suddenly you're 30 and you look at him with slightly different eyes.
Okay.
So go back. Tell me, where is fancy bread, or in the heart or in the head? It's Shakespeare. It's what Portia said. To tell her love, the box of lead hides what he seeks, the key to her bedroom. You see, that girl's an heiress. The blokes line up at her door. She has the choice of who she wants. What girl could ask for more? It's different for the rest of us. We don't have quite that luck. We all hold out for Mr. Right, and meanwhile we just... Well, you know how it goes. Girls on town in highest heels, sharing juicy goss, clubbing on a Friday night, no one gives a toss. You know the games, you play the field, a girl who's her own boss. But by the time you're 26, your dancing days are lost. Your friends don white, they walk the aisle with bouquets of rose and moss, and then talk becomes of babies and prams by Silver Cross. Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. Then your body clock starts ticking and your heart fills up with dread. You think, I need a husband soon to have him in my bed. If I don't find him quickly, I may just as well be dead. But you don't look so pretty now your hair is faded red. And in the changing room, you notice how your backside spread. Suddenly, you recall those young lads. Oh, how they pled to take you out and spoil you. At least, that is what they said. You wonder what became of Colin, Richard, Mark, and Ned. Then you're shopping down the high street, and an old flame turns your head. It's when you think your time's run out. That's when you'll retread.
And have you retrod?
Nope. Don't
what?
Think so.
No.
Having a quick think back? No, no, no. No.
No one in your past that you might think, yeah, maybe he's changed. Maybe those spots are now just dimples. And what do you think?
No.
Very definitely.
Very definitely. No, I haven't. I'm thinking back. No, I haven't retrodden any path. At all, no.
And have you kept friends with any of your old boyfriends?
Yes, a couple. Yeah, I'm just trying to think back, because I got involved in long-term relationships, very long-term relationships at quite a young age, a series of long-term relationships, but I would say I've kept in touch with one who now designs cars, I think in Detroit, but it might be San Francisco.
Oh, I was going to ask if it was romantically, but probably not if he's in Detroit.
Oh, no, just as a friend, I stay in touch with him through Facebook, really, but the rest, no, they can jog on. They didn't quite meet the standard.
They didn't meet the standard then, and they don't meet the standard now.
No, they might have done something rather silly in the past, which I then found out about, and they can just... That's it, they've gone.
They've got. So you like that? I admire that, but I guess you believe a leopard doesn't change his spots.
Oh, you just... If you get hurt in a relationship, and I challenge anyone to say they haven't been hurt in a relationship, even if it's you that ends it, there's still pain, isn't there?
Because, always, yeah.
And I suppose I'm either brave or a coward, but I just don't want to put myself up for that again. And so I don't revisit, no.
It's probably I think that's very good advice, really. Mm. Having said that, I am married to my very first serious boyfriend that I absolutely fell in love with, but I had other relationships in between, as did he. But so I'm kind of doing what I say isn't a very good idea. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because I just bumped into an old boyfriend in the middle of Naples.
Oh, were you retreading, Jen?
Well, no. I'm happily married, but it was the fact that there he was with his girlfriend, with his new girlfriend, and I was with my husband. But of all the places in all the world, as he said, of all the airports in all the world, you walk into mine, you know.
Yes.
And I just thought, I can't believe, you know, having last seen him in the middle of Soho about 20 years ago, to suddenly see him in the middle of Naples. And then it all comes flooding back, that you can retread in your mind, can't you? Because you go back and you have this on a loop.
I do sometimes find myself hitting London, going up there for a weekend or going to some major European city and thinking, oh, please don't let me bump into someone who I someone who I know might be jet-setting around the country or the world or something like that. I think, please don't let me bump into. But other than that, I'm...
What, because then you would feel somehow diminished, that they had had a better hand in life? Or?
No. I just couldn't face having to speak to them. So, let's just leave all of that in the past and move on to the future, because that's... You know, you can't live your life in the past or worrying about that. Go for the future.
So you're obviously very good at that, moving on.
Yes.
And that's the thing everybody tells you you've got to do, isn't it? I mean, that's the phrase of the day, isn't it? Move on.
Oh, I just think life is an adventure. I find myself at the moment on the edge of another adventure. I have so many things that I could do because I no longer have the ties. Now, my son has gone to university. I don't have to get home by 6:30, 7 o'clock, and make sure that I can pick him up from the ferry, because he commuted to the mainland for his sixth form. Pick him up from the ferry, make sure there's food for him, make sure the heating's on or the washing's done.
Just be there for him.
And just be a mum. Mm. It's quite... Now I've got over the original shock of being by myself, it's actually quite liberating.
It is, but I think it feels because I'm in a similar situation to you, and I've always felt, you know, you feel like you've been let out of the cage.
Yes.
But then you almost kind of think, I'll just stay in the cage. I keep thinking, oh, I haven't got to rush home, but then I find myself rushing home for nothing, just for the cat, really.
Completely pointless. Oh, see, I was ahead of you on that, because we lost our cat just over a year ago, and I refused to replace him. He was irreplaceable, obviously, but I haven't replaced him because I thought, I don't want the tie of an animal once my son goes to university.
Okay, so what so is I've the next sort of adventure, like, Jenny?
I don't know.
But you're ready and waiting, aren't
I'm
you?
I'm ready.
You've
and
got
waiting.
Your bags packed in the hall, I can see.
Actually, they're in the back of the car.
Love it. It's that kind of almost Thelma and Louise, but without the tragic ending, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
You're heading off.
And there's so many parts of the world I haven't seen, because I was a Bridget Jones type girl about town. I was working in London before I got pregnant.
I was working in London. I had various relationships we already discussed, but I didn't do that thing that a lot of students do now, which is explore the world.
Yeah.
I never did that.
Where do you want to go?
Everywhere. Everywhere.
If you could go to one place now, if I could magic you up a golden ticket, where would it be to?
Probably New York.
Wow. Have you been before?
Nope. I haven't been to any of these places. Canada. I'd love to see Canada. I picked up a brochure the other day. I'm thinking, oh, look, whales, grizzly bears. And then there's Arctic Watch or whatever it is on TV at the moment, and they've got the polar bears, and there's so many things in the world to see. New England in the fall with the colour of those leaves, desert islands. I'd just like to go to Prague, Berlin. My sister was in Berlin when the wall came down because she was working out there, but I haven't even been to Germany.
So where's the farthest flung you've been?
Turkey, I think.
Because I like to think we've got a little bit of New England in the fall here on the island at the moment.
It's beautiful,
it's so
leaves,
gorgeous,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And we are a little, not a deserted island, but we are a beautiful island.
Yes.
And
yes.
We have palm trees and we have sand.
Yes. I know. I walk along Apley. Derek Sandy's there singing, you know, a couple of years ago. I had to video just the ambience, the atmosphere with people barbecuing down at Apley and this music in the background. And it's quite exotic.
I love his Welcome to the Isle of Wight song.
Yes.
It's so beautiful. I think that should be the island's kind of national anthem. It's just gorgeous, isn't it? It just makes you want to come here.
Yes.
Fills you.
Yes.
And he's so full of energy, isn't he?
Yes.
And it fills you with joy when you see him perform. So I remember taking my mother down to Yarmouth when they had the festival down there, and he was performing in the tent, and she was probably about 10 years ago, and she was bopping away. She had been about 80. She was bopping away, and in the break he came over and he introduced himself to Mum, and there were some younger women who wanted his autograph, and he said, "I'll be with you in a moment. I'm just with the Queen right now." Mm. And of course, you know, that just made my mum's day. It was just such a lovely, beautiful way to put it, you know, and she just beamed, you know, looked up at him, and he seems such a lovely guy. I mean, I don't know him, but he just seems really lovely.
No, I don't know him either, but I've just heard his music.
Yeah.
And it's a nice vibe for the island, isn't it, in the summer?
Yes, joy and energy, and that's over at Apley, isn't it?
Yeah, I think he goes down there, doesn't he?
Yes, he does a lot of stuff over there.
He just passing you.
Yeah.
So the island is lovely. The coastline, amazing. I was down at Brook. Where's Isle of Wight Pearl? Just past Isle of Wight Pearl, down there along that way, just last weekend, walking along, and it's gorgeous, and there's so much. The other thing that I find with there is you're walking along and you know that dinosaurs have walked that same space.
Have roamed the beach. They've been there with their suntan oil and their little bikinis.
Oh, I know. Eyeing up the smaller dinosaurs.
Yes.
I know. And I just think to walk that same ground as...
Was the tide out? Did you go out and walk in the dinosaur footprints, which you can do right out?
Yes. No, we weren't quite that far along, and no, we didn't do that. We just walked along
and
the beach.
Did you see the casts?
I have seen the casts before.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Once you see them, you never unsee
them.
You're like, they're just everywhere, and
that's
And
yet you can walk past them and not have a clue what they are, or not even notice them.
No.
But I took my niece down there, and she just won't have it. She won't have it. And I said, "But you can see the shape." And she said, "No, Auntie Joanie, no, she will not go there."
You have to actually take her out and see the footprint.
We did go out and see the footprint. None of it. No, it's just some figment of crazy Auntie Joanie's imagination, that one.
Well, there you go. You can see where they've tried to dig it up, though, can't you?
Oh, I know. Somebody has actually taken an angle grinder and taken one out to sell or put somewhere, which is just awful, isn't it? I mean, it's hideous. Let's not give people any ideas, though.
No.
Okay,
no.
So more from Jenny after the break. We'll be hearing more of her poetry and finding out all about her work as a celebrant here on the island. So join us after the break. Thank you.
The Political Soapbox on Vexis Radio with me, Joe Plum.
Yes, we can.
Because Brexit means Brexit.
This, Mr. President, is a remarkable record.
The Isle of Wight Zoo is having difficulty importing a tiger.
My father gave me a small loan of $1 million.
Which we wouldn't have if we listened to the muttering idiot sitting opposite me.
Joe Plum's Political Soapbox, Saturdays from 1 o'clock.
Order! Order!
Stay social and get in touch. It's at Vectis Radio on Twitter. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
Welcome back to Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my very special guest today, Jenny Law. Welcome back.
Hello.
Jenny, before the break, we were talking about your poetry, and I know you're also a speech and drama teacher, but I'm interested to hear about your work as a celebrant.
Okay.
Because when we were talking earlier, you were telling me things I had no idea about.
No.
So can you just explain it to perhaps some brides-to-be out there for your wedding service? It's not just weddings you do, though, is
no,
it?
No, it's not. I do ceremonies to celebrate marriage, because they're not legal ceremonies. There are aspects that you have to still do legally. I do renewal of vows. I do baby namings. I don't really do funerals. Occasionally I'm asked on a special occasion, but essentially it's weddings, baby namings and renewal of vows. So I will write and perform a ceremony bespoke and uniquely for the couple.
Yes.
Really.
So just to be clear, they would go to the town hall or wherever, they'd go to the registry office and have the actual, the legal bit,
that's
if
right.
like,
yeah.
and then come
to
you.
Me, and I do the other bit.
The other bit.
So what you would do, you would go to the registrar's office, be that on the Isle of Wight or wherever you live, because listeners might not be on the Isle of Wight, and you have to do certain legal parts, which is prove that you have no reason why you can't marry, prove your identity, say that you can take this person to be your husband, wife, partner, and sign the marriage register in the presence of two witnesses. But the exchange of rings, the vows that you make, the walking down the aisle, the giving the bride away, and additional ceremonies, they're all ceremony, they're not legal, and so you can do them wherever you like, and that means that you can do it in your back garden. I have done ceremonies on the beach on the Isle of Wight. I have done them in private orchards.
So you don't need a license for those venues?
You don't need a license. It doesn't have to be a licensed venue. It can be a licensed venue, and many of the licensed venues on the island are very geared up to doing weddings, and they'll do everything for you, the venue decoration. You also have, obviously, companies on the Isle of Wight that specialise in venue decoration. But using a celebrant frees you up to do it wherever you would like. It might be somewhere that has special meaning for you as a couple. Perhaps where you got engaged was a restaurant on the beach where you got engaged, and you want to go back there and say your vows to each other. What you have to think about when you get married, are you doing it because you want to have a nice dress, nice flowers and things like that, or are you doing it because you want to say in front of your friends and family, this is the person that I want to be with for the rest of my life, and then say to that person that you love them and that you will be with them and support them through thick and thin for the rest of their lives.
But you can have both. Obviously, you can have the lovely dress and the flowers.
Of course you can.
And
of
still
course
come
you can.
To you and have a super special ceremony.
Absolutely. A special ceremony designed especially for you. And then I can add in additional little touches, such as hand fasting, and that's becoming very popular nowadays.
Can you just, because I first heard of that about 6 months ago, and I had to look it, I had to Google it. So can you just explain to the listeners what hand fasting is?
Hand fasting, traditionally, back in medieval times, a couple would have their hands fastened together as a form of betrothal. And if they could live together for a year with their hands fastened, that meant they were married, and that was okay. But that was back in medieval times.
They were in effect shackled together.
I know. Can you imagine? Wouldn't work nowadays, would it?
No. No, that's news to me. I didn't know that.
No. So
that wasn't on Google.
No. But what I tend to do, there are two ways I can do it. I can do it where you hold hands, two hands, and you face each other, and I wrap the ribbons around, and we create an infinity tie. So you would make a pledge to each other. Say, I will ask the couple, say Fred and Joan, do you pledge that you will bring patience to your relationship? And when times are tough, take a step away, breathe, and come back with new eyes to your relationship. And they will say, I do. And then I would wrap the ribbon around their hands. Okay. So that's one way. Or the other way is to do it where you hold your left hands with your pulses touching. And I'm trying to explain it at the same time as demonstrating it. Yeah. I mean, as nobody can see. But they say that the vein in your left, third finger of your left hand is the one that goes directly to your heart. And that's why we place our rings, our wedding rings, on that finger.
Ah.
So with that in mind, if you place your, both hold your left hands, but with your pulses touching, so it's sort of one hand on top of the other, and therefore your hearts are beating as well, which is very romantic.
It is, isn't it? So do they provide the ribbon, or is it a...
Yes, because I don't know your colour scheme.
No. Okay.
So you might want the ribbons to match your colour scheme. You might want the ribbons to match a particular experience in your life. Say you went to, or your honeymoon is going to be on some exotic island, and you want the blue for the sea, the green for the trees, and the gold for the sand.
I see.
It can be whatever.
Do you actually tie? Do you have to do any special knots?
I don't do a special knot. I don't do a special knot. I just do a loose tie, and then I bind the ribbons together, and then I hand them to the bride at the end of the ceremony, and she can keep them with her bouquet. We might place them on the table, because many of my couples choose to sign a certificate. It's not a legal certificate. There's no wording on it that suggests it's a legal certificate. It's very much a commemorative piece of paper, but a lot of people like to take photos of that, and
yes,
they like to add that in.
And what's a sand ceremony?
Now that's really good. If it's a second marriage perhaps, and you've got children and you want to get children involved, the idea is that you get different colours sand. It can be just two colours, one representing the bride and the groom, or you could have, if say there's two children, you could have four colours, bride, groom, and one for each child.
So great if you get married on Allen Bay Beach.
Great if you get married on Allen Bay Beach. But you can, locally, you can buy different coloured sands in some of the specialist shops. And you pour the grains of sand to create a very nice little pattern, such as you might find at Allen Bay.
Yes.
The idea being, once the grains of sand are mixed, you can never separate grains of sand, can you?
No.
And so it's quite commemorative and celebrates the uniting of two families. I did one recently at a naming ceremony, which allowed the children within the family to be involved in the new little baby.
Yes.
And they all made a little promise to the new little baby to be there to support the child, and then poured some sand into a special little teddy bear jar. So that was very sweet. So it's not just for marriage celebrations.
No.
You can use it for renewal of vows as well, because it allows your children to be involved. Again, with the hand fasting, children or people from the family can be involved and present the ribbons. And so they're involved in the ceremony.
Okay, and I've got to ask you, as we've just come out of Halloween, jump the broom.
This is really interesting. Jump the broom was originally, I believe, a Celtic ceremony, but it came back into being in the 19th century with African American slaves. Because they were slaves, they belonged to someone, didn't they?
Of course, yeah.
And so they were not free to marry. But what they used to do was have a special ceremony, and then together they would sweep with the broom, sweep the negativity away, place the broom down, and then the guests, the congregation, would say, 1, 2, 3, jump. And they would hold hands and jump over the broom together into their new lives.
So almost sort of representing some sort of freedom together.
Freedom together and a new beginning.
Oh, that's lovely.
So that, I think that's really lovely.
So if people do that, do you get many requests for jumping the broom?
I've done 3 this year.
And are they special brooms? Are they those type of witchy brooms?
Yes. Yes, it's best. Them? It's best if you can get that. But you can make
what
it.
What are they
yourself.
Called? They're not just called witchy brooms, are they?
Are they besoms?
Yes, besoms? That's the word. That's the one.
Something like that, isn't it? Yeah, we know what you mean by witchy broom.
Yeah.
Yes, but they're very good, and you can decorate that with ribbons and flowers, and so you can keep that then as a memento within your home.
Lovely. So these all sound quite pagan in their origin.
Yes.
Can you have had, I'm assuming it's fine to have had a church ceremony if that's what you want, and then have perhaps a bigger ceremony with all your, with a, you know, more people or whatever, and come to you and have a slightly different ceremony?
Well, the thing with using an independent celebrant is that you can incorporate religious aspects, whatever that religion.
I see.
And I must be honest, I am a convent girl. We are the worst.
You and me both, Jenny.
Yes. So, I do know a little bit about Christianity, and I can incorporate Christianity into ceremonies. I can. It's a, although I do these additional ceremonies, and they sound quite pagan, that doesn't mean to say that's all I do. I do both.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But you could go, because often you'll get a couple, and I'll go back to something I did in the summer. I had a couple, and one family was quite religious, and the other part of the couple family wasn't religious at all, nothing to do with God at all. So they found a compromise, and we got special permission from English Heritage to conduct a ceremony in the ruins of a parish church in Dorset. And this is a very protected site. We were quite controlled in the shoes we could wear around the site. We had no chairs there, apart from a couple of elderly relatives were allowed to have a chair. And English Heritage were quite controlled. But it was within the grounds of a parish church. And we did say a few prayers. However, the church was built on the location of a Neolithic burial ground, and the tower was constructed from the stones, this is back in the 12th century, from the stones of a henge, just down the road from Stonehenge, as
I see.
So it was, the tower was built from the stones of this henge, and the church was constructed on a Neolithic burial ground, and so it was the merging of the two faiths, if you like,
pagan and
Christianity. Originally, in the 12th century, it was to encourage people into Christianity. But for my ceremony that I conducted, it was to allow the two to merge.
Brilliant.
So,
I've got to ask you, have you ever had any real bridezillas?
No. I think you only become a bridezilla when you don't know what you're doing, and you're nervous, and you want everything to be perfect.
Yes, and perhaps you're throwing a lot of money at something.
And you're throwing a lot of money, or you're trying to do things on a budget, and you're worrying about it costing more money, because that's the other thing. And I think as long, by working with me as a celebrant, although I'm not a wedding planner, I can offer advice, but I can reassure people, brides in particular, about how things will go and what will happen. And I think if they are reassured, and they know you're on their side, and they know what's going to happen.
Anything happen that shouldn't have happened? Because that's life, isn't it? It's always going to throw you in a curveball and a pratfall moment.
What, within a ceremony?
Yeah.
Yes, but it's not the sort of thing I'll talk about.
Okay, so. Well, I'll tell you one of mine, because I've been married three times. One of them, I was at a registry office, and I glanced out of the window as I was taking my vows, and I should have known that the marriage was doomed from that point, because there was a rather unattractive concrete patio, and there was a stray dog who'd made his way in and then proceeded to squat and do his business as we were reciting our vows. And I thought, well, there you are. That's the only comment you need on the day, isn't it? And there we go. Exactly. His prediction came true, sadly. And I got married in black, which was probably, again, a very foolish choice of colour scheme.
I think perhaps you saw what was going to happen before you even went there.
Yeah, well, there we go. We're coming back full circle, aren't we?
Yes. So, but what I do, I just like to have the support there. And it, you don't have to fling as much money as you've got there. A lot of couples nowadays, they're looking to buy their first home. And it's, do I spend thousands and thousands on a wedding? Or do I have something where I know what's going to happen and it's still lovely? But then I've got a deposit for the house.
Yes, exactly.
And I have had a few of those.
There are.
And I have more of those coming up booked for next year as well.
Yes, people now more than ever have got to consider those practicalities, haven't they? But what about, there must be some delightful moments, particularly perhaps with the naming, you know, the naming the babies.
Oh, do you know the one I liked? As a speech and drama teacher, I work a lot with young children. I teach children from the age of 6, but I interact with much younger as well, up to 18, I hasten to add, and adults. But I interact with some younger ones. There was a ceremony in the summer, and it was horrendous weather, absolutely horrendous, and it was pouring with rain, and the bride was going to have to walk in this horrendous weather into her ceremony. And because I wasn't on a time limit,
I went and I spoke to her and I said, how about we wait until the rain eases in 20 minutes? I don't have a problem. I'm not in a rush. I'm here to support you. Spoke to her. She was all right with that. Had a chat with the guests and explained what was going to happen and why. Who wants a bride to walk down the aisle absolutely drenched?
No.
You don't. Nobody wants that. They've done their hair, the makeup, the dress. And it was the sort of thing that she would get drenched.
Exactly.
And there were a number of children there. It was a very family orientated ceremony. So I said, okay, we can have some entertainment. Who would like to come up here and sing a nursery rhyme? And we had 20 minutes of Incy Wincy Spider, Baa Baa Black Sheep, Humpty Dumpty.
Oh, wow. Inspired way of dealing with a dreary day.
I know, but they loved it. Three-year-olds standing on a chair at the front singing Incy Wincy Spider.
Always a winner.
Always a winner, but they loved it and their confidence boosted from doing that.
And put a smile on everyone's face.
Everyone's face.
Oh, how lovely. How lovely. So I'm sure there's lots of people out there would like to get in touch with you, Jenny, in your celebrant capacity. So how do they do that?
A number of ways.
Okay.
The first one is this Sunday, I am at Ventnor Botanical Gardens on the ground floor near the bar at White Weddings, wedding fair. I understand that if you're a groom, as long as you wear a badge and pick up a token, there's free beer in it for you.
Excellent.
Apparently.
Free beer alert.
That's free beer alert. So I think that's something for the lads. And there's a wedding fair and I will be there. Other than that, I'm on Facebook.
As Jenny Law?
As Island Celebrants.
Right. Island Celebrants.
Island Celebrants. And I'm on the internet, so you can Google me, www.islandcelebrants.com. And there's lots of pictures there. There's comments and feedback from people I've done ceremonies for. And lots of questions are answered. And more information about me and my background as well.
Fantastic.
My professional background.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
Brilliant. So we've just got about 10 minutes more, so I'd love to hear more poetry.
Poem.
Go on. What one are you burning to share?
Well, I don't know. I'm thinking.
How about the one about single mum that you were telling me about?
Ah, yes. There is one, single mum, she says. It's called Thank You But No. Now, this actually has a slightly different ending, an extended ending from the original. But I found as a single mum that, particularly when I first moved to the island and I was in the middle of a building site, that a lot of people would assume woman on her own, she won't be so fussy, I'm going to ask her out. And I actually had someone bang on my door at 8 o'clock at night, one of the builders as it happened, bang on my door at 8 o'clock at night, do you want to come down the pub? I'm like, no, what did you expect me to leave my child in bed alone? But they had these strange ideas and it was just an assumption that I was a single woman and therefore with a child and therefore up to it. So this is called Thank You But No. It's a common flawed perception that following conception, a woman who's not married needs to find herself a man. And once she's shop-soiled goods, she will not be out the woods until she's lured some poor weak wretch and trapped him any way she can. But let me put you right here, because it really is a fright, dear, how the dregs of male excuses emerge from the toilet pan, brimming full of self-delusions, which in turn become confusions when their very generous offer makes it all just hit the fan. See, the great appeal of harakiri far exceeds the wish to marry a man whose social graces peak at cheap beer from a can. She would rather you walk past and label her a social outcast than to squander her devotions on some Neanderthal man. But if you're seeking out a lady as a friend or soulmate, maybe, then please don't run away just because you see she's got a pram. Look beyond this poisoned status. Going lonesome's quite courageous, I tell you. She's heard that gossip. Frankly, she don't give a damn. Her focus is on hugging, she is nurturing and loving, and a life lived on an even keel is all that's in her plan. She's a woman and a mother. She's got talents like no other, and if you are the right one, then she'll sure stand by her man.
Oh.
There you go.
Yeah. that resonates with me, and I think it, well, obviously resonates with you too, doesn't it?
It does, but it actually resonates with a number of younger girls I know that are single mums in their 20s.
It's sad that attitudes haven't changed that much, isn't it?
Isn't it? Isn't it?
So basically, these guys think, like you say, you'll deal with the dregs because that's as good as it's going to get now.
Yes, because you are tarnished and shop soiled. But frankly, no, no. I just think if you go it alone as a single mum, I think you're courageous.
Well, I think being a mum is the hardest. Being a parent is the hardest job in the world. I know it's a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason because it's true. Mm. And I think being a single parent is double tough, isn't it?
Because I'm quite shocked actually that attitudes haven't changed. My mother became a single parent in the early 70s through bereavement, and I know that one of her children, she had four of us, one of them was described by the head teacher of said local state school, don't make any effort with that one because they come from a single family, single parent family, so nothing will come of them. Said child then went on to become a director of quite a large company.
Yay.
All got degrees.
Fantastic.
And things like that. I came across it myself as a single parent from the island, and the fact that youngsters in their 20s are coming across it now, some 40 years later, it's quite disturbing that people haven't been able to say, hang on a minute.
Haven't been able to move on.
They can't move on. They think nothing will ever come. I mean, my own son is training for dentistry now. I know you said that you've been a single parent and your child has been very successful as well. And I don't know why people assume. I find it quite frustrating still.
It's stereotyping, isn't it? Of the worst kind.
Absolutely.
But people still, you know, people want to stick a label on other people, don't they?
And does it make it easier to live if you've got a label on?
Not for me, no, but no. Other people seem to think it easier to put you in that box and then make a decision about you before they even know you, judged on a couple of indicators of what's going on in your life. And they haven't got the full picture at all.
It's frustrating. It is a psychological... It's been researched. I know that we do that. I studied psychology for a while, and that was... I can remember in my distant past doing an experiment, and that is what we do. That is part of stereotyping, that's part of human nature, but it is very frustrating and annoying.
And I think it makes the stereotyper, the one who's doing the stereotyping, feel far more secure because it makes them feel superior, doesn't it? In no matter what's going on in their life, they think, well, at least I'm not a single mum like you. You know, I have had that.
Actually, now you come to mention it, I think I probably just go blinkered and don't even see that. But now you come to mention it, yes, I have had that.
And I know
I have had that.
Like me, you work full time and you held down a job.
Several. Yes.
And brought up your son alone. Mm-hmm. And to do all that, I mean, it's hard enough when you've got a partner and it's a two man job. Mm. But when you're facing it alone.
Well, I retrained to go into education so that I was there more for the school. But the thought was that I would be there more for the school holidays. Obviously it's quite heavy duty work
it
being
is.
A teacher,
and then you need the holidays to recover, I would imagine.
Yes.
And you're always planning. You've never got your feet up, really, in a job like that.
Teaching is such a hard profession,
Yeah,
I don't do it now,
but I think, and with that full time work, you and a child, I don't know about you, but the guilt is enormous because I never felt I was doing anything justice or anything as well as I could have done, because when I was in one place I thought I really need to be in the other, and I just wasn't giving anything sufficient time, but there was no choice.
Sickness. It's when your child is sick, it's the worst.
Or when you're sick. Yeah, you have to plough on. And
I didn't worry about me being ill, it was when the child was ill.
But then if you're ill, you can't look after your child, can you?
No. So but when the child's ill and you're being told you have to go to work or else.
Yes.
And you don't know what to do.
No.
Dreadful,
dreadful predicament. Mm. So I think there's great strengths in being a single mother. And you find, parts of, great hidden depths, don't you, that you didn't realise, in hidden strengths. But also, sadly, it shines a light on all one's weaknesses as well, and you realise where your shortcomings are. But I don't think any... I think you've got to just hold your... applaud people, anyone who brings up a child single-handedly, because they're doing a great job, aren't
they? Absolutely. Yeah. Go us.
Yay. So I know you've got one more poem that we'd just like to hear very quickly, which is your one about ageing. And that comes to us all, doesn't it? You know, even the ones that are young and lovely and gorgeous now, I'm so sorry, darlings, but it is going to come your way and we all have to cope with it. Some of us not very well. So have you got some uplifting words maybe, Jenny?
I have, and this is for the older ladies and for the younger people listening as well. I would like to say that how you live your life as you become older reflects in your face. Okay. So this is called The Conflict. Camouflaged by vivacity, time lurks, patiently stalking carefree youth. Silently, in the shadows of indifference, time works, manoeuvring invisible tendrils across the face before enlisting gravity for the final drag. On one bright day, the war zone is declared, where mirror shows invading lines and sags, signalling a struggle to deny the battlefield. Creams, potions, beauty secrets shared launch counterattack on laughter lines and bags, all in vain. Youth must yield to defeat. And yet, through the haze of a war-torn silvered glass, the greater beauty of your soul reflects what youth once feared would be decrepitude. From the ashes of the conflict, a phoenix can appear.
Ah, I like that. I like that thought to end on. So that's given us all hope. All hope in our rocking chairs. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Jo.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. So once again, thank you, Jenny Law. And if you want to get in touch with Jenny, she's under Island Celebrants on Facebook, Twitter, and on your website, yeah?
That's right.
Super. And please, thank you so much for listening, and join me again next week when I'll be talking to Jack Whitewood, and he's the director at Ventnor Exchange. So have a lovely weekend, and I'll speak to you all again very, very soon. Thank you so much. Bye-bye, and mind this rain. Take care. Bye-bye. www.vectisradio.com